You know what's ridiculous about this episode? We recorded last week's episode when my truck was still in the shop, and because of your travel schedule, your crazy travel schedule, my truck is still in the shop when we're recording the next episode.
Why is that my fault?
I don't know. It is.
Okay. I mean, I don't leave until the end of the week, so that doesn't make much sense, but we can go with this. I'm okay with taking some blame.
Thank you. Thank you. That's all I had. There's a new threat amongst us. Someone that was once seen as our savior is now our threat. Headline from the New York Times. Tech giants, once seen as saviors, now viewed as threats. Cue music.
I feel like the people that made this headline haven't watched 80s movies where they were always threats.
Well, you see, there was a utopia. There was a period of time where things like the Arab Spring were blossomed with the help of social media. And that was the story of empowerment with the tech industry. It's the story the tech industry loves to tell themselves, bringing freedom, enlightenment, and a better future to all of mankind.
It's the Star Trek vision.
But now the world is seeing them from something different. You see, tech companies are under fire for creating problems instead of solving them. At the top of the list is the Russian interference in last year's presidential election.
Mm.
Social media might have originally been promised as liberation.
Today I learned Russia is a tech giant.
But it proved an even more useful tool for stoking anger. Now you see, these tech giants became puppets of Russia. Their manipulation was so efficient and so lacking in transparency that the company themselves barely even noticed it was happening. The election is far from the only area of concern, too. Tech companies have accrued many tremendous amounts of power and influence. They are now our greatest evil. What do you think of that? I mean, you know, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have Donald Trump.
I can agree, but not for the reasons that they say.
Oh, yeah?
I would say that tech giants are probably a problem because, Whoa. The man is trying to silence me.
Apparently we have a loose cord under the table. I apologize.
No, I think it's the man trying to silence me.
Oh, yeah, it was the NSA wiretap.
Yeah, I think tech giants are a problem not because they screw up on their websites. I think they're a problem because they have massive lobbying.
I didn't think you were going to go there. I'll tell you why they're a problem. And it's not because of what you said.
Oh, privacy invasion, Chris? Is this what it's going
to
be?
No, I mean, that'd be good too. No, I think it's because they compel people to virtue signal all the time. And they make this mass hysteric, everybody has to grab a pitchfork, everybody has to say something. If you don't say something, and if you don't say it fast enough, then you're condemning the problem. Not saying anything is the same as making it worse.
I feel like that's more...
It's horrible to the societal dialogue.
I feel like that's more the people on the platform perpetuating it than the platform, though.
Right. Yeah, it's the people. It's not the platform's fault.
Yeah, so why is the tech giants evil then?
Because, see, this is a false premise that is pushed to you by companies like the New York Times. We'll have a link in the show notes. You see, because there is a thing, Rikai. The New York Times makes money by selling ads, not by selling newspapers. They make money by selling ads.
And you get more ad clicks when there's more controversy.
Right. That's definitely part of it. Absolutely. But also, they're going after their competitor. There should be a big fat disclosure. It says right here, the New York Times competes directly with Google and Facebook in advertising revenue.
Oh, that's true.
They're direct competitors. There's just no way to reframe this conversation. This is why they go after Philip DeFranco and PewDiePie, too. They are trying to delegitimize new media platforms like YouTube, like Google Ads, like Facebook Ads, which are all scams, but they are attacking them for reasons that are bullshit. Like, they didn't have any influence over the election. They don't, that's all crap.
So this is basically the writing version of, say, NBC Universal putting an ad on their TV network or before one of their movies saying, YouTube is terrible.
Correct, exactly. Yeah. It's absolutely what it is. And they are capitalizing on a political climate of scare and concern around Russian involvement with the election. And they're capitalizing on recent investigative participations that Facebook's been involved in around the Russia investigation and 3,000 ads on Facebook and all this crap. Like, they're talking about, like, these ads actually affect people, and, like, any of this social media advertising actually works. They're pretending like any of that's true, and none of it's true.
If we want to see that it's not true, just look at Twitter.
It's all false, but yet they can write about it in a way that makes it sound menacing. I mean, it really sounds menacing. It sounds like these are Well, horrible, powerful. Like, they write in here about Amazon.
Yeah, they basically imply that they were probably colluding with Russia because they missed something so obvious.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they really go after Facebook and Amazon in here and Google. It's interesting. And it's just going to get worse as Google and Facebook and Twitter and Microsoft and all these other tech companies that are in advertising start eating up larger and larger pieces of the pie. And that's really where we're at now, is they are directly hitting the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and other publications really where it hurts. And it's not subscribers, it's revenue and advertising.
Yeah, well, and it says something that they are so reliant on advertising, they haven't found any ways to diversify.
LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. Go there to sign up, get a 7-day trial, but more important, keep the user error program on the air, because that's how they know you heard about it here. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. You go there and it's a platform. You see, it's like a platform to learn more about the Linux, but not just the Linux. All the stuff around the Linux too. You know, like your OpenStax, your AWSs, your Azures. You know what I'm talking about?
Listen, Chris, I have a question.
No.
We can set aside all that info.
You know what, Yukai? There's no such thing as a good question. I mean, what? I'm sorry, what?
I need to know, can I take courses on Linux Academy and get rich as hell? Because I need some money real bad.
Yeah, it's like your hyperloop to success, if you will. Because what you do is you plug your brain directly into Linux Academy. I'm sorry, what? I'm sorry, I was just getting a correction from the production room. I can't talk about unannounced features yet. Well, I'll tell you, you'll still like the other stuff they have, like a self-paced in-depth video course library on every Linux and cloud and DevOps topic, hands-on scenario-based labs, real human beings that can give you help when you need it.
So what you're saying is I can stuff this info into my brain at times that I actually have time,
yeah.
Which is almost never.
Right.
But they'll give it to me whenever?
Well, they have a course scheduler. So if you're busy, you know, maybe you got a business, maybe you got 3 kids, maybe you host too many shows in a week, and you have a 2-hour commute right now. Course schedulers. They got course schedulers.
You just pick
a time frame, Rico.
What if I only have like 5 or 15 minutes?
Oh, my God. You got to make a change. If you only got 5 or 15 minutes, what's the matter with you? Well, utilize their nuggets.
Okay.
Go on a deep dive, Rikai, and empower yourself with knowledge and change your life at Linux Academy. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. It's the answer to all of life's problems and at least to your Linux education. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. So here's something on the totally other end of the spectrum that I thought maybe would warm us up for today's episode.
Okay.
I just thought this really just tells you how you never know what it's going to be. This is the real perspective. So there's some guy flying overhead the studio right now in his airplane, and he knows, like, I could die doing this today, because he's literally up there doing, like, flips and tricks, because he's got one of those old prop airplanes, and he's just having a good old time above the studio. And he must know when he gets in that plane, his plane could malfunction and he could die.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you an example of a situation I never would have, like, thought I would die from. But this man had a heart attack after a 6-inch fish leaped into his mouth.
Into his mouth?
Yeah, yeah. The man, who was 28 years old.
What's like, the width of this fish? Is it, like... How big is this guy's mouth?
I didn't get exact measurements.
Because that's a small target.
Well, the problem is it came out in pieces, so they couldn't get exact measurements. But so the man who's 28 was not named.
The fish came out in pieces?
Well, they had to rip it out of his throat, yeah. They had to, like, go after it.
First of all, why didn't he either just swallow or spit? One of the two.
It got lodged, dude. It got lodged. they had to use forceps to get it out. So an emergency responder.
Oh, and I guess the scales would, like, latch on.
Yeah, I got a picture of it here. If you go to the show notes, you'll be able to click on the story. It's got, like, it's like a wide fish. It's,
huh.
Yeah. It's gross, actually.
His mouth must be huge. That is a really big fish.
You know, it's no bigger than a big dick, really. It's like, it's just...
Yeah, but have you ever had a dick propelled at you out of the water into your mouth?
No, that'd be a really wide dick, too.
Yeah.
Matt Harrison's the emergency responder for the Southwestern Ambulance Service, shows up on scene in under 2 minutes. Pretty damn respectable, right? And when arriving on scene in a dimly lit pier, there was a man out there fishing and a friend of a man already performing CPR on somebody who has collapsed.
How do you perform CPR on somebody with a fish in their mouth?
Well, this was the issue. So the medic gets up there.
I feel like that would be a better situation for the Heimlich.
Yeah, so they get there and he's like, so what's going on? It's like, oh, he's got a fish stuck in his throat. What? I got a fish stuck in his throat. So sure enough, the guy uses something to pry this 28-year-old's mouth open, the paramedic, looks down there with his flashlight, sure enough, sees the ass end of a fish tail sticking out of this guy's throat. And so he goes and gets a pair of forceps and starts going at it, trying to get it out of there. But basically, it's hard to really, in the dark, it was hard to tell the difference between the man's throat innards and the fish innards. Because it's all kind of the same color, except for the fish was slightly off gray. So he was looking for stuff that was slightly off gray, which is just so gross. And so he starts pulling the thing out in chunks a little bit out of this guy's throat.
And suddenly the guy's uvula is gone.
And he's like, I knew I only had one or two attempts to get it out of there. And so he managed to get it out. Then they took one of those like bag things to start respirating the guy and force air down his throat. And then, of course, they rushed him off to the hospital. And he says, after six attempts, the fish finally came out, and it was all mostly in one piece. And to the paramedic's amazement, it was, oh, here you go. It was a whole Dover sole. So it was a Dover sole fish measuring about 6 inches. So it's not even it's not a long dick. It was just a wide dick. I'd never attended a more bizarre incident, the paramedic said, and I don't think I ever will. But we're also glad the patient has no lasting effects from his cardiac arrest, which could also have easily had a tragic and devastating outcome.
It's an average length but girthy dick.
Yeah. You're like, you never know.
I have an alternative theory.
Oh.
And I think it's far more likely than a dick than a dick jumping out of the water into your mouth.
I wouldn't undersell the possibility of that, though.
I think this guy was just trying to get some cheap sushi. And he didn't want to fess up to that, so he came up with this alternative story.
Oh, man. That's your story, and you're sticking with it?
Have you seen how expensive sushi is?
Yeah, well, you know, if you ever want, there is a kind of a cool – this isn't unique to Smoky Point, but there is a sushi belt over here, and it just goes around all the time. You can pick cheaper sushi, and then you just, you know, you roll the dice, see how it goes. It's all good.
But if I'm going to pay any money for sushi, it's got to be the good stuff.
Yeah, I hear you.
Like, you can go real quick up to, like, $70 in sushi.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Speaking of the good stuff, this story just keeps getting better and better. So Google has that new Google Mini, you know, for the home.
Yeah.
Google Home Mini.
Google Puck.
Yeah, the Puck. Their dot competitor. And it blew up online that turns out a few of them, accidentally were listening to everything always and always transmitting and sending it to Google.
I'm sure Amazon's has never done that.
No,
ever.
No. Well, it turns out that the problem was... when I heard that, I was like, how the hell do you ship that?
Yeah.
How do you not get that trigger word? How is that not baked in from the very, very beginning? Like, why is that not something that is hard-coded into the system where development begins with how do we activate
this thing? Let me
guess.
It was, but somehow they screwed it up?
Yep. So it uses this new touch fabric sensor. Mm-hmm. On the top, and the touch fabric sensor on some units.
Oh, the
was
sensor
up.
Was always being sensed.
Yeah. So Google's fix is just sending out a software update that disables the touch sensor on all of the Home Minis everywhere. Just sorry, that feature we announced on stage that you were going to have where you could push to talk, never going to have it.
Wow.
Which, you know, I actually use that on the Echo. I use that feature, particularly when something loud is going on in the background. I'll use that, or if I have it muted but then want to invoke it specifically, I'll use that.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a hacky way to fix it, but...
It might just be temporary so they don't get their ass the suit off.
Jeez, or, you know, talk about just really burning a product's reputation.
Yeah.
This is not an area you want to be considered creepy.
I feel like that could have been solved with a lot more product testing.
It does feel like, you know, maybe they were pushing it a little bit, trying to get out there
fast.
It's
okay. This is just Puck Beta.
Last.ting.com. You don't like using stupid mobile, do you? Don't use stupid mobile. Use smart mobile. Only pay for what you use. Only your minutes, your messages, and your megabytes. Don't buy into their scam, man. They're robbing you. They're getting you to buy minutes and messages and megabytes you're never going to use, man. And if you do use it, they punish you, man. And they're keeping you down. Think about this. Last.ting.com, dude. It's nationwide coverage, no contracts, and you only pay for what you use. It's just $6 for the line. And then your usage on top of that.
Okay, bad Keanu.
Oh, is that what that was? I don't know what that was.
Yeah, that was chaotic.
You just wanted me to stop. That's what you wanted. You just wanted...
I just wanted you to make sure that I can save some money because I still need money, Chris.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Okay, you can do that too. And then you get a great dashboard. You get great customer service. You can bring a device or you can buy one directly from Ting. And they don't have like the Ting Experience firmware that must get validated before they can push a new version of Android. None of that shenanigans. Ting is honey badger about that stuff. I love it. They'll just give you data if you want that. They'll just give you phone or text if you want. It's so nice. Oh, and also, if you just want to go pick up a SIM and put it in like one of your IoT devices, well, guess what? Ting could do that too. Last.ting.com. A couple of days ago, I saw a big announcement that really surprised me. IGN has acquired Humble Bundle. You know, the Humble Bundle guys and the Indie Bundle and all that.
They got the whole Humble store.
Yep. They have made that acquisition, which I don't know. I guess my initial thought was, oh, this is...
Yeah. From what I hear, Humble Bundle's dead.
Really?
I mean, when was the last successful IGN property you heard of?
I couldn't.
Including IGN.
Yeah. Yeah, it did seem like a weird purchase.
Is IGN publicly traded?
I don't know, but here was one of their quotes that sort of stuck with me that I thought I wanted to get your perspective on. They said, this is a quote from IGN, "We want to stick to the fundamentals in the short term. We don't want to disrupt anything that's being done right already."
In the short term means long term, we want to change this shit to do what we wanted to do.
Yeah, they said there's a lot of shared vision and overlap of our customer bases. There's going to be a lot of opportunities.
Shared vision. Does IGN even sell anything other than ads on their website?
Clicks. They sell clicks, dude. That's what they sell. Well, I guess this was bound to happen. I mean, to be honest, Humble Bundle has excited me a lot less recently. It did seem like some of the hype was dying down.
I mean, yes and no. They still make a shitload of money off their Humble store. Because it's one of the best places to get like Steam game sales that aren't on Steam.
Yeah, definitely. So this is where I wish IGN could just stay in the editorial business and not get involved in the content selling business where they sell games and their payment processing potentially. It's a lot of overlap where it seems like editorial could be influenced by other business decisions. You know what I mean? Like I wish this kind of stuff just didn't go on.
Yeah, that kind of
be naive to assume it doesn't.
That kind of mixes, you know, how much of their reviews and that kind of stuff is influenced by the fact that they own a place that sells games.
I like this comment online. It pretty much sums it up. There goes the humble part.
We're gonna have the bundle?
Yeah, it's just gonna be the IGN bundle now.
I mean, what, it could be worse. They could have been bought by, like, say, GameStop, trying to get into better digital distribution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, you know, screw GameStop.
Yeah, you're right. It could have been worse. I guess who would have been the better purchase? I wonder if Amazon could have done this right. Because there's been some companies they've bought they haven't screwed up.
I think Amazon actually would have been a great purchase. Even if they did decide to, like, discontinue the Humble Bundle and integrate that functionality into Amazon, that would vastly improve Amazon's game category.
Yeah, and then if they also continued, like, all the... One of the things I love about Humble Bundle is you can go download all the games you bought.
Yeah.
If they could host that, that'd be good. I mean, I would like to have this happen, but as in terms of large companies that are going to throw around cash, they seem like maybe the one that would have been okay. I just wanted them to stay humble, dude. That's all I wanted, humble and indie.
I mean, yeah, because most of the other options are worse. You got EA, and you got Ubisoft, you got... Valve would have been okay.
I could have seen Microsoft doing something like this. Maybe Valve, but even there, I actually would prefer not to.
I feel like Valve wouldn't have wanted to do it because it's too much overlap.
And if I can buy a game from Humble versus Steam, I'll buy it from Humble so that way I can just download the .run file later or something.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, anyways, I guess we shouldn't say the sky's falling just yet. We have to watch and see what happens. But
the sky is half fell. All right, Chris. Science is kind of crazy. So I have a question. What scientific fact just scares the shit out of you?
My girlfriend and I, Hadia, were just watching videos on quantum entanglement a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to butcher this, but just so that we have a common ground here, I'm not a person to explain this, go Google it yourself, but quantum entanglement is this really interesting problem in science where you can have two, like, I'll just say particles or whatever.
Quarks.
Whatever, that are far, 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 far apart. Different ends of the world, even. And
Different galaxies.
Yeah, but, I mean, we've actually tested different ends of the world, where when you observe them, you have to observe them in a certain frequency, in a certain way, in a certain angle, essentially. And when you do that, it alters the way that that quark or that object spins. And there is a corresponding entangled quantum
particle
that begins spinning in the opposite direction immediately, faster than the speed of light could communicate to it.
Mm-hmm.
And we have proven this over and over and over again. There is some sort of state information that is being synchronized between these two quantum entangled particles that is communicating faster than the speed of light.
The craziest part is it only happens, as far as I understand, if you don't directly observe it. So you have to observe it, like, tangentially. If you directly observe it, it stops working.
So the idea that you could communicate somehow between these two objects is really an interesting one. And the fact that we can create the entanglement and then that we can test it is also just sort of mind-blowing to me.
Even though we don't know how it works.
So what about you?
Mine's kind of in a similar sphere. It's the fact that we live in a reality where most of the stuff that exists in the universe, we don't know about. Like, the majority of the matter in the universe is dark matter, and we don't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
That just blows my mind.
I'm even a bit of a dark matter denier in a bit. I gotta tell you.
Really?
A little bit. I mean, I feel like it's a bit of a catch-all. I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but it's sort of like, oh, that right there, that thing that we just can't describe why it's like that, that's dark matter, energy.
I mean, isn't that basically how science always is until it figures it out?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just waiting for more. This right now, if you think about where you and I are standing, is what space looks like.
Yeah.
This also blows my mind. We think of space as that thing that is out there.
Yeah.
But the universe...
Everything is space.
Yeah. We are just on a rock in space. Yeah. And this is, if you, from this perspective, this is what space looks like, is right here.
We are a minority on the planet because we are the only intelligent species we know. We are a minority in our solar system because we are the only intelligent species we know. As far as we know, so far there's no other intelligent species in the galaxy. And we're also all living in a minority of the type of matter that exists.
Yeah. Yeah, that, yeah. And in a minority arrangement of it.
And all of that leads me to believe that we also live in a simulation.
Hmm. You see, one of the things that blows my mind is I was just watching a couple of videos that was talking about how more and more evidence is suggesting that perhaps the multiverse theory is correct.
Yeah.
And that there are many, 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 many realities.
Yeah, that is the other option. That's the one I would prefer to believe, but it makes so much more sense that we're just characters in some super intelligent aliens
video game. Which one has more meaning? Because the thing about the multiverse theory is then none of this matters because you're just one of infinite universes and...
Unless you take the tack that every choice matters.
But how can that be? If there's infinite universes and infinite decisions or whatever that's spawning them, then an entire universe can collapse and disappear and it will have no difference on anything. Nothing will have changed in any of the other universes.
I mean, it would have changed for the people in those universes, though.
I don't know. It's like they don't ever exist.
I mean, you're assuming that every choice completely splits the universe and they're isolated from each other. And
I don't know.
That
would be presuming how it works. Yeah, you're right. I guess to me it seems that if you have millions or billions or trillions or unlimited universes, then none of it matters.
I mean, you could argue that maybe there is some connection between the universes and that's why we have things like the feeling of deja vu.
That's wishful thinking, I think. Whereas if it's a simulation, the results of the simulation matter somehow. Even if your life is just a metric that counts in one column in a SQL database for an alien race to review, like there is a difference being made by your existence because it is contributing to whatever that simulation is observing.
Well, except for when they decide that they don't like how this save is going and then they just load it back up and go
in
a different direction.
But even then, there was some sort of value derived from this being played out.
So you're saying that we have more value because we wasted an alien's time?
Yeah, as a simulation. If it's a multiverse, that, you know, trillions of realities, It really doesn't matter what any of us do. None of it matters.
Now, what if we combine the two and we have a branching simulation where we are just trying to get the best reality inside that simulation?
I like it. I like it. I think maybe quantum entanglement is an indication of a limitation of a simulation CPU capacity.
Maybe. You know,
maybe we're hitting the edges of CPU compute power. And so quantum entanglement is sort of like compression, where you combine multiple pixels and non-moving frames together, and then you can reduce the file size by doing that. And maybe that's what quantum entanglement is.
Well,
think about that.
I've heard from Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson that one of the arguments for things being a simulation is just all the weird shit that happens that we end up having to explain because...
Like dark matter. We come up with dark matter and black holes and...
Well, it's more like just like the weird shit that happens in life that we figure out how to explain later. And it's caused by essentially... Yeah, you know what level of detail is?
Level of detail?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Like on computers...
Like you have verbose info... You have like info debug...
No.
Error.
No, like on computers, if you have like a graphical simulation... They highly render everything that's close,
yeah.
And as you get further away, they render it less and less
because
you don't see it as well.
Sure.
So imagine applying that to our reality. And some of the stuff that ends up being weird is stuff that, you know, is kind of distant from people. And but we still have to explain it because we're curious weirdos. So we figure out a way to explain the bad quality of something. If that makes sense.
Yeah, we come up with a theory and then we back our way into explaining how it works.
Yeah.
The premise is established first and then we back our way into what seems to be legitimate science to get there. Or
and then the simulation adjusts to make that right.
Oh, no, that's a trip.
Yeah.
That's a trippy thing to think about. I tend to see it in a way that I think is more Rick and Morty. And that is... the universe is more like an animal, and it churns out things to consume over time. And people and planets and stars and matter are part of that. It's not like a sentient animal, so I shouldn't ascribe like intention to it, but it just churns through things and creates new things and turns and churns through them. And I think that's really the totality of it. It's really about a cycle. It's a cycle of life that is happening at a universal level. And there's a lot of little things that happen as these, and I think we try to ascribe more meaning to it than we probably should.
I do think another point in the simulation basket would be, doesn't it feel like everything is very, it happens in cycles?
Mm-hmm.
Which feels like a very computery thing.
Well, give me an example. Because like news and politics, that's all that is controlled by cycles. That's controlled by media cycles and PR cycles.
Everything from the bottom up. You got the cycle of life, you got the news and politics, you've got weather cycles, you've got the sun traveling or the earth traveling around the sun.
Yeah.
The sun traveling around the galaxy. It just all the way up to the top. It's just everything is circular.
That's true. That's true. Maybe that's just the natural order of things.
Also, we could explain, you know, all the crazy stuff that happens is just aliens getting bored and poking at the simulation.
Turn that knob there. Turn that knob over there. Let's see what the fuckers do when we do this one.
Okay. They've handled all this smaller stuff pretty good. Let's throw a world war at them.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think that's sort of like a modern day god. It's creating like a modern day religion a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
It's awfully fanciful, and it uses a lot of... Anytime you take what we understand today and try to project it, it feels like it's probably off the mark. Like, whenever you look at, like, 1950s sci-fi movies, and they tried to, like, go into the year 2000 or whatever, and they always have these clunky pieces of equipment that are so far from what we ended up with, it's because they don't know anything more than the context in which they live in today. And so when they try to project forward... they can only bring with them their own observations. And so when we try to project what could be happening, we're limited by our own observations.
I mean, we already kind of started delving into this almost 20 years ago, though. Because if you think about it, The Matrix, it's basically the simulation theory, except instead of aliens, it's robots.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I always kind of figured that that's where that came from, and that this theory's been kicking around for a while now. Elon Musk and others that are more popular today are making it more and more well known.
We could also like multi-layer it, because if you think about it, we have our own people simulators, The Sims. So above us could be an alien,
and MMOs.
But that alien could also be a simulation.
We create simulations of environments. We create flight simulations. We create societal simulations for study.
Yeah, if we can do it to the degree we do with our limited technology, Imagine what somebody one up could do.
I'm not saying it's not possible.
But then imagine what somebody one up from that could do. They could have a simulation of the alien simulating us.
I'm not saying it's not possible. So here's another perspective. So
see, to me, I feel like it's almost inevitable.
Here's the I agree. I do agree with that too. Here's the anti-simulation theory, because it doesn't preclude that theory at some point. If you accept that we are just the biological bootloader that's going to eventually build the simulator, so work on the presumption that we eventually are going to be the ones to build that very simulator that seems inevitable.
I think that's a very self-indulgent assumption.
But here's where I'm going with this is. I think like a really like totally different theory, like a sort of spiritual metaphysical theory, could be that there are perhaps unlimited universes, and each universe is just randomly created and creating things. And eventually, when you get to a certain stage in creation, biological life is just sort of the next thing that comes together when you have the building blocks that have all come together to create the planets and the solar systems and now the water and the air on those and atmospheres. Like the next thing that just sort of happens is life, and it's not necessarily because of any simulation or any god. It's just the natural result of trillions of years of grinding it out on a universal scale. And what ends up inevitably happening is this dead, dark universe actually ends up creating the very sensory perception that is able to then witness the universe itself. And then that cycle comes to a complete, and that eventually fades away.
Because eventually we are supposed to end up in a dead, dark universe again.
Right. And then this particular reality has played itself out.
And or it could just be yet another cycle where we get to a certain point where everything stops and then it starts contracting again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We won't be here for that part. That won't be our problem.
Here's another thing that kind of freaks me the hell out. There is only a 1% chromosomal difference between us and monkeys.
Right.
Imagine if there was like somebody that was like 1% or 2% better than us.
Hmm.
And that could just happen by, you know, random genetic mutations from sun gamma rays.
Well, you know, there were other species of sapiens. I mean, we're the Homo sapiens species, but there were others.
We clubbed them all to death.
Yeah, we did. We basically defeated them.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that eventually another one couldn't eventually work its way out.
A couple percent better than us. I mean, that's basically what all of the mutant comics are.
Yeah, that's true.
Everybody just assumes that the way to make us better is to give superpowers, but it could just be super, super fucking intelligent people.
Yeah, yeah. Now you're getting a little Star Trek to Wrath of Khan up in this business.
Yeah, true.
And maybe we are the ones that create it. I tend to think that artificial reality and truly believable simulations and even really good, totally independent self-driving tech is way more further out than we like to think it is. I think popular conversation has, you know, self-driving cars in the next 5 years. Look at my Tesla, can do it today. But I'm talking like truly challenging, like rural driving in different snowy conditions, like really detailed stuff. Like FedEx drivers can self-driving FedEx trucks that are bringing packages to doorsteps here in Arlington, Washington, in a housing community. With kids out on the street, that kind of self-driving, I think, is more than 5 years. I think AI that can do really advanced conversations, like where we think bots are going today, that's more than 5 years out. I think it's going to be a lot like speech recognition has been in the industry. There has been various forms of speech recognition since the 80s. I've been using that since the 80s, and including a psychiatrist that you would talk to. Do you remember that Dr. Slyshack or whatever it was?
No.
This is a DOS program that was a speech recognition program, and it would talk back to you. And then later on, Apple had voice commands on Mac OS and Mac OS 8.
I remember controlling like Windows 98 or something with Dragon, naturally speaking.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I installed tons and tons of Dragon for doctors, and it's still barely passable on my phone in 2017.
I think actually the exact opposite of you.
You think it's accelerating?
Yeah, I think it's accelerating, and I think it's becoming an exponential curve. And
no, that's the hype you're thinking of.
No. I think you didn't let me finish, Chris.
No, I know. It's just I had to be funny.
I think it's accelerating. It's an exponential curve, and it is going to outpace our ability to understand it.
Yeah, that's like the zombie apocalypse version of it.
Well, I think it's more like the Terminator.
Yeah, you know, see, the problem here, Rika, is companies suck really, really bad. And so the very company that's probably made you kind of think that, Google, is actually the company that is now responsible for a flatlining in the robotics industry. And that's not me saying this. That's The Atlantic and Bloomberg today. Here it is.
You mean those people that are trying to get ad clicks and putting hype headlines?
How Google's meandering, secretive, noncommittal robotics efforts since 2013 have slowed down progress in the entire robotics field.
Are you saying that there's somebody that sells ads that's attacking a competitor?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to always be able to make that claim. See, that's one thing when you're going after, like, Google, but this is an Alphabet company now, and they have separated this out, and there's not an advertising angle for this particular subsidiary of Alphabet. So when they're going after the credibility of YouTube as a platform, or Facebook as an ad platform, specifically going after those platforms for Russia influence via advertising, that to me screams bias. But I think
I think this comes from the opposite direction, where they're just trying to get the maximum amount of clicks for their own ads.
Well, so you have two different outlets that are reporting on this, and this rings true to me. So they say it's in scattered, ambitious, frequently abandoned objectives. And then they make huge acquisitions that are huge hurdles to integrate with the culture.
I mean, but isn't that like what every company does? They throw things at the wall to see what sticks?
So the major comparison difference they're making here is here's the companies that they bought, and here's how they were doing before Google bought them, and now here's how it's going since Google bought them. And it's like, bwah.
Well, that's assuming Google is buying them to continue what they want to do rather than acquiring talent or something.
Right, but when you buy companies like Boston Dynamics... Like Boston Dynamics is a name that I can say that people know, because in the small run they got super popular because they became known for like those, like that horse robot or whatever, yeah, that walked around like a maniac.
And the dog robot.
Yeah.
See, but the thing I remember specifically about Boston Dynamics is that they bought Boston Dynamics, and then I remember they also moved most of the people from Boston Dynamics to other parts of the company.
Yeah, maybe.
I think like 90% of Google's hires are talent acquisitions.
But here's my overall point, is that companies like Googs and Microsoft and Apple
are stagnating.
And Amazon, they slow it down. Like they just cock it up. And then you get a few outsiders like your Teslas, but they're overreaching and they're overpromising and they're overstretching themselves constantly. And they have to compete against these companies that are as rich as nations.
Yeah,
and these companies that are as rich as nations are also as slow as nations now.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting as slow as a federal government, and I am skeptical of any of it, because to get AI at a level where it would actually change society, and to get self-driving and all of that stuff, it's going to require companies like Google and Amazon and Apple, but also companies like Toyota and Ford and the federal government and other governments to actually get off their asses and collectively work together to accomplish something.
See,
that just alone seems like it's a decade out.
The way I look at it is it's more like a tide. You've got this company that comes in, sets a new bar, and then goes back out because somebody bought them. Then you have this other company inspired by that comes in, sets a further bar, and goes back out. So I feel like it's like an incremental improvement.
But I think what could make a huge difference is that the startup cost to be a legitimate robotics company, you need such brilliant designers, developers, engineers, people creating the hardware, and then you also need to have weight at a federal level to get things through politically. That's something that I think fewer and fewer companies are going to be able to achieve.
See, I think you are discounting a very important fact.
What's that?
Famous people that want to be attached to something
okay,
that's really good.
Maybe.
Lots of endless VC funding.
You know, I think you could be right, because I think my argument could also have been applied to SpaceX, and they're doing better than I mm-hmm. think they would in this frame. So if the market conditions are ripe, perhaps it is possible. So we shall see. I would like it to be sooner than later, but my gut tells me that, you know, like right now, I'm out somewhere that is like I said, it's about 2 hours from here.
My gut tells me that you are done with technology and you just want to live in the woods for the rest of your life. No, so you're
just
a pessimist.
I just don't, there's no real market reason to have great infrastructure out there. So you have you have like satellite internet, you have some cellular out there, but there's no cable, there's no DSL really to speak of.
Well, but then the counterpoint is you got Google trying to work up their Project Loon. You've got SpaceX trying to create their satellite mesh network that's faster than normal satellite.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's always counterpoints to everything on both sides, so you can never know what's going to happen.
That's what makes it an interesting industry to follow.
Well, that's what makes reality interesting to follow.
Yeah. All right. So while we're doing I forgot we're doing Ask Air still. Thanks. Hashtag Ask Air. If you could have one gadget from a sci-fi movie / brand, what would it be and why? But no magical items and no Metachlorians. So it has to be like a real legit sort
of
sci-fi.
So easy. The
tricorder?
No, the sonic screwdriver.
Sonic screwdriver?
From Doctor Who?
Oh, okay.
It can do basically anything. Okay. You just will at it and you hack computers, you unlock doors. It's amazing.
Yeah, that sounds like a kid's toy. I was thinking like a replicator.
It can do medical analysis. It can create things.
You wouldn't want a replicator, dude?
No.
That just blows my mind. You could replicate cash.
I could make a replicator.
No, like say you could go get a Star Trek The Next Generation replicator in this house. Like, we take out the microwave and we put in Captain Picard's replicator that legit works.
You know what? Can I change my answer?
Computer. $10,000.
Can I change my answer?
Yeah.
I'm going to go back on the sonic screwdriver and I am just going to take the TARDIS.
Ah. What about a holodeck? I mean, the TARDIS would be pretty good.
Time travel.
Yeah.
You could just go to the future when they've created replicators
I feel like that's borderline magic, though.
Is it, though?
I kind of feel like it is.
But in the context of Doctor Who, the TARDIS is just a really advanced machine.
What makes it travel through time?
Whatever, the thingy.
Because I could tell you what makes the Enterprise go to warp. I could describe that from a scientist.
I can't tell you that the TARDIS is something that was created by a civilization. It's not something that was just this magical object.
Not a magical civilization?
No.
Okay.
Just
I feel like that's a hack to the answer. It's too powerful. It's like, you know, it's too much. It's too much.
They didn't give any restrictions beyond midichlorians.
Well, magical item. It's a tweet. You know, it's a tweet. Yeah. Okay. So I feel like if I don't have a Hail Mary device, like a phone booth.
Or a replicator that can create anything.
No, I feel like replicator's legit. Because you can't replicate anything bigger than the replicator. So that's an inherent limitation. And
well, you could replicate parts for a bigger replicator.
Yes. Well, I suppose. But you'd have to be able to, you know. I don't know. I feel like that also would be sort of cheating. But what I would do is I would just replicate parts to a larger component over time, I suppose. Yeah. Okay. So a tricorder would be on my list. A holodeck would be pretty nice. And all my stuff are Star Trek items, though, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I doubled down on Doctor Who, so.
A transporter would also be very, very useful.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't want a transporter. I'd rather have something.
There goes that.
Chris, wow.
This guy is
just trying to silence me today.
That's the NSA.
I would not want a transporter. I would rather have something like the TARDIS because the TARDIS transports you. The transporter potentially, depending on who you believe, kills you and creates a copy.
I could also go, if I'm going for something that's not Star Trek, Rick's portal gun from Rick and Morty would be pretty cool. I would like that quite a bit.
Well, what about the portal gun from Portal?
Sure. Although Rick's goes between realities, too.
Oh.
Yeah, so, you know, you could go to a reality where everybody has pizza all the time. You just grab some pizza and then come back to your reality. That's pretty convenient.
Right, right. So I can't travel through time, but you want to hop realities?
Why not?
And this isn't a magical device?
It's either that. Well, LSD can do it. That's not magic.
Did they explain how this portal device works in Rick and Morty?
They've a little. I know a little bit about it.
I feel like we're on a similar level here, Chris.
Well, it wasn't my go-to.
You can have the portal device. I'll have the TARDIS.
I didn't start with TARDIS. I ended up on the portal device. You started with TARDIS.
Well, that's because I have a better imagination than you.
Okay, so this is the last one that I have on my list. This one came in from John3Voltus, hashtag AskAir. It's long, but he did it on Discord. First of all, he prefaced it by telling me that he hates me for ending last still mad about ending last. And I hear him. And if I could come up with a compelling Linux video show that wasn't just me shouting at a camera, I might consider it. Or me clickbaiting. But until I can come up with a legitimate Linux video show that's worth actually producing in video every single week.
Hashtag Linux Unplugged video audio only.
We do have some plans there. Tune into the latest episode of Linux Unplugged. But he says, why do you guys you guys being Jupiter Broadcasting, still even need a video editor? The only technical video show on JB is now TechSnap. I guess he forgot about BSD now.
Mm.
That sucks, man. That hurts when somebody forgets about you. Why do you need a video editor if you don't have video shows? I mean, Rikai is awesome, and he's an excellent asset to the network. But calling him a video editor, it seems a little excessive. He's an excellent co-host, though.
Well, it turns out our audio shows, they all still actually have video components that we still release every week. Those videos do need to be put together on some level, and they also take time and effort to put together that...
And they have to be encoded, they have to be uploaded, they have to be posted on the different sites and on the CDN.
Mm-hmm.
That's all part of the release process that is separate from the audio process.
Which actually takes, even setting aside the actual video editing part... The release takes hours just because of the realities of putting together video files.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we don't just turn around and release the raw recording of the video because it contains stuff that's not relevant to the show.
Yeah.
Sometimes some of the shows have their intro music put in after the fact. All of the shows have their intro visual sequence put in editing. And then, if needed, levels are fixed in video there.
So while they're not video-focused shows, I do edits for both audio and video. And some of the stuff needs to be retimed for every episode. And so everything does have video editing involved. It's just not necessarily something that you would notice.
Yeah. Now, the transition that happens is the shows like Linux Unplugged. Or Coda Radio. Those are audio-only shows, but the MP3 that you download is derived from the video edit of those shows.
Yep.
So we do a single video edit, and then we produce a video version, a master file that gets encoded into several formats, and we produce an audio file. Everything in the pipeline is uncompressed, so it doesn't get compressed to MP3 until after the video edit.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's the original source. So the video editor is actually responsible for the audio versions of those shows that are predominantly, completely, really, audio shows. Now, we have other shows, which is newer for us, like User Air, this one, and Linux Action News, where they are solely produced as audio. There is zero video component during the production of the show, and it is edited as an audio show, and then we derive a video visualization from that audio source. And that's a totally different workflow, a totally different recording format and methodology and editing and all of it, completely different.
And because of User Error specifically, because I edit User Error, I don't really refer to myself as a video editor anymore, just an editor.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. So if you have a question for us, hashtag AskAir, and ask us either on Discord or I like them on Telegram if we can. Yeah. So we had a hashtag AskAir about bringing on future guests, which we're always open to,
mm-hmm.
like maybe Mr. Popey and Wimpy were suggested.
Yeah, basically down to everybody else's schedules.
Yeah. This week, we just did you and I because you're leaving for TwitchCon.
On Thursday afternoon.
Now, this is, I don't know how deep you want to go into it, but I guess it's kind of a big deal for you because you don't travel very often except for going home.
Well, that and it's actually pretty damn horrible timing, and I wish I could refund everything so I could have an extra $1,000.
Yeah, I mean, this was all sort of booked before everything you talked about last week.
Yeah, basically a couple weeks before my life changed, I decided, hey, let's spend a grand on going to TwitchCon to try to further my Twitch career.
Right, and it seemed like the time, though, I was like, damn, like, dude's gonna, you know, he doesn't normally travel, especially if he's not going home to see people. And you don't normally really even take time off like that, even though you're still going to do some stuff on the road because you're some sort of maniac.
Well, you know, somebody's got to get LAN out.
But so that I just thought maybe we'd spend a second. What made you push over that line? What was it? What was it? There's like, you know, I'm just going to I know I hate traveling and going out there and I know I hate spending this much money, but I'm just going to do it.
Well, I don't really hate traveling. I just generally don't.
Really? You don't hate like going through security and the airplane?
I think it's worse. I think it's worse when you have more people because you're less flexible. Because when you have more people, you can spend less money on the flight because you're not doing it just you. So you get a crappier seat and it's more uncomfortable and you have to coordinate with people and makes the security a pain in the ass. So if you're going solo, it's not so bad, especially if you pick good airlines.
Yeah.
And I may or may not have booked a business class ticket.
Yeah, things like that definitely make it better. If you can do that.
But
you might be able to write this off as a tax write-off, by the way, because the way some of this work structured, you should look into that.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
But the reason I decided to go was because at the time I was 100% focused on doing Twitch, and that's actually kind of fallen off, which is part of why I regret it now. Not because I don't want to do it, just due to lack of time. Turns out if you're a video editor and you do work on the side and you have a girlfriend and you have another girlfriend and you're trying to move all at the same time, there's not a lot of time.
Yeah.
Although I did manage to stream last night.
Logjam. Oh, good. But you didn't try to, like, sell the tickets. You could have sold the TwitchCon tickets.
No. Oh, they're tied to your Twitch ID.
Tricky Twitch.
They're also unrefundable. My plane tickets are unrefundable. My hotel is actually very nicely being paid by one of my viewers.
Oh, cool.
Originally, they were going to split the cost with me.
Wow.
For some reason, they were like, hey, I'm just going to pay your $350. Enjoy yourself.
Wow.
I don't know why, but I am very thankful to them.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
So have you come to a peace about it? Like, you're committed?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to go and I'm going to make the best of it. I'm just going to try to focus on Twitch again as much as I can. I feel like I lost a lot of progress on my Twitch. I was up to 45 subs. I'm down to 18. A lot of that's because I haven't been streaming, people haven't been coming and resubbing with their Amazon Prime sub. That's kind of why I prefer people subscribe with the monthly option, even though it costs money. But
it is difficult to have a passion project and pick up momentum on it and then have to divert your attention and watch the momentum fade. Because that's happened to me now a couple of times on the vlog.
Yeah.
Where I've had some really good cadence. And then because I'm done with the thing that provided the cadence, like maybe a trip to New York.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I watch the views go up, 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 and subscriptions go up, up, up. And then I stop and it goes, and it just drops off again. I'm like, oh.
Well, the most frustrating part is like, I'm relying on that to succeed to transition in JB to probably hopefully make my life easier overall. Mm-hmm. So I have more time to do the things
there's
that I want
to
do.
A lot of pressure on, a lot of expectations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand that too. There's definitely projects I've launched where they've got a lot riding on them.
Yeah.
And then you don't see it pan out. It's really hard not to sort of, for me, where I go with it is I really start kicking my own ass and I really start like just beating up on myself, which is really a hard mode to get out of, because when you're trying to be a creative person and come up with fun ideas to do content, the worst way to kill that is to just shit all over yourself constantly.
Yep.
So it's just a real pain in the ass. So are you hoping maybe you go down there, it might get you fired up? You think maybe it might just push you over a little bit to do it more, take it seriously again, give you maybe a new track? Or
well, yeah, it's not that I've lost the passion to take it seriously or that I want to do it less. It's just the lack of time.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that maybe I'll be able to make some connections so I can collaborate with some people, get some quicker growth, maybe get to my goal sooner so I can make my life overall easier and have more time to focus on it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Man.
Oh, by the way,
should be fun.
For this month of Twitch, subs are half price, so go sub to me.